Hello, I'm Alice Arnold. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. I'm with Jonathan Bailey in the company office of the Gielgud Theatre. Yeah. Jonathan, you are playing in company Jamie, who was originally Amy. Mm. And it's interesting because a lot of fuss has been made about Bobby being a woman as opposed to a man, which it was in the original production. Mm. I don't think there was much talk really about the fact that, because it just seems so natural that Amy is now Jamie and you play one half of a gay couple who are getting married.
Yeah, I think it's quietly revolutionary, I think, in that in terms of gay theatre, because it's been retrofitted, the idea that now it's a guy with a guy, there's no reference necessarily to sexuality or commentary from the other people on stage, which I think is a breath, well, it's not a breath of fresh air. That sort of puts it lightly. I think it's quite important because, of course, there are all narratives of queer identity that are shown on stage. But to see a couple that essentially is just experiencing a human, very human moment in terms of fear of marriage and settling down, I think is brilliant that there's no one sort of.
And you can do it because now, you know, there were equal marriages. Well, has been legal here since for a while, but in America more recently, but it just sits really, really naturally.
Yeah,
I had to actually look up to see that it wasn't in the original.
Oh, wow, well,
in the original, because that was 1970 and that would have been controversial.
Well,
then,
and
but it just seems so uncontroversial now.
I think also the what company did in 69 and 70 when it was written and performed is that it sort of held a mirror up to society, and I think it would be there's no reason why. Bobby, female Bobby in New York now would have just heterosexual friends.
No.
There's no reason
wouldn't.
For that.
She wouldn't.
So it would have been
New York,
slightly odd.
Surely not. It would be odd if she did only have heterosexual friends, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. But, so it's an amazing opportunity that Marianne.
And you sing this wonderful song, which is the fastest song I've ever seen. And then you actually do my favourite bit in the whole show, if I had to just pick one moment, when you jump into a fridge.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, into a it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. How long did it take you to get to sing that song with so many lyrics that fast?
It requires a great amount of practice. I'd say that the thing is, because I've never done a musical in the West End like this ever, and I'm amazed at the athleticism and self-care that's required. And you do, I think the idea of approaching it as an athlete seemed to be the way to do it, especially because, as you said, I think it's like 6-point-something words a second in the song, and there's rarely a moment to breathe.
Just for reference, the normal speaking speed is 3 words per second.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yep.
It's double that.
Wow,
more than double that.
More than double, yeah. And there was a moment in rehearsals where I'd wished I'd learnt the song in the Alps, because it seemed like that would be the only way to actually successfully do it with high altitude training. But but then it settled. And obviously... With the care of Marianne Elliott, the director, and Joel Fram, the musical director, she managed to really focus it by really thinking and making the words that you're saying very active, which I think has been a revelation for me as a performer. Because I think with Sondheim, if you can, the trick every night is to perform it as if you've never thought those thoughts before, and that can be quite hard if there's 6 words a second. But if you can really buckle down and start very slowly and then speed up, then it really takes flight.
It doesn't come across as just this is the fast song. It comes across as this is what I'm saying, this is what I'm singing about. It happens to be incredibly fast.
Yes, because I'm having a panic attack.
But which
some nights I really do.
Which all fits very well. I mean, were you aware of the challenges of Sondheim? Because probably this Sondheim musical is one of the most challenging of all, I think, in that it encompasses everything that Sondheim is about.
Yeah, I think you're
right. One of which is a lot of lyrics in a song.
But yes.
Were you aware of all that before you came to the part?
Yeah, but there's something interesting about Sondheim from an outsider's perspective. I mean, I love musical theatre, I love TV and theatre in all forms, but Sondheim's always been revered and sort of embalmed. So I think there was a fear approaching it, not really understanding why. I knew it was brilliant, and I knew I'd seen a couple of his production or his shows and his pieces and thought, God, these are brilliant. And actually the realisation is that actually he writes something very human, and it's very accessible to perform because it requires a bit of you in a way that I wonder if other musical theatre doesn't quite, in that you have to sort of approach the ballad, say in another musical you have to approach a ballad from the outside in. Sondheim really requires you to go inside and of the complex material and then work your way out. So actually, you have to put yourself forward, and the moment you do that and you commit to it, it becomes very clear what you have to do with it. So, but that was a big revelation, I think. Yeah. So actually, it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be.
Well, I mean, it is a phenomenal performance. I mean, you do light up
you.
The show. It is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
As I've been saying,
it's a dream.
Everyone
it's a total dream
be
come
in
true.
This.
It's wild.
We'll see you at the Olivier Awards. We know that. Just an absolute dead cert. Yes.
Cinnamon roll.
I first, have some more cinnamon roll. So I'm going to just flatter you through most of
it. I can't bear
it. That's all right. You'll get over
I'm going to start speaking at 6 words a second then.
It'll be fine. You'll be fine with it. So I first sort of really knew you from W1A, which, you know, I have a history with that sort of whole production and Paul Schlesinger and all that. And how much fun was that to make?
Amazing. Completely brilliant. It was sort of amazing to go into the building and the institution and to realise very quickly that it wasn't a comedy after all. It was actually a modern day horror story. And I was, you know, just working with people who you'd seen on TV being like delivering amazing performances. And as you say, Paul Schlesinger, amazing producer, and John Morton, the writer, who's written some of the best comedy over the years.
One of the least funny men you'll ever meet.
Well, yeah, but
doesn't laugh, does he?
He's very kind, and he's forensic and sort of
yes.
He's a scientist, isn't he? When it comes to it, and he knows what works, and he does. He's one of the directors that I work with in TV where, when he says he's got it, you know he has. Do you know what I mean? Like, I swear, it's quite nice to work with that pragmatism, but he's sort of brilliant.
I just always find him quite hard because when you think you're being terribly funny, he never laughs.
Oh, I see, yes.
He doesn't laugh at you.
Yeah, yes.
Because he's written it, so he knows it's funny.
Yeah, I see.
But
he
sort of, you know, analyse it. Yes, that's funny. No, yes. That's fine.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
So, right, okay.
And that equals,
is there going to be any more of that?
Sadly, I don't think there is.
Are we done with it?
I think so. Well, but, you know, who knows? Else. 2012 was such a brilliant series, wasn't it? And then to see Jessica Hines and Hugh Bonneville come back, who knows where they could go? I think it's such a precise piece of writing that it requires a lot from John Morton, so it would be greedy of us to steal away his time when he could be doing other things. So we'll see, maybe he'll come back to it. But
so the next thing was, I'm going to, there's another flattering story.
Oh, no.
But Leslie Nichol is a neighbour of ours, she was in Downton, played the cook in Downton,
Mrs.
and
Patmore,
she was in your last production at the Donmar Warehouse.
That's
she
right,
stopped
yeah.
me with her dog. Our dogs are the same breed. She
yeah.
said, "Alice, you have to go and see this production at the
Donmar." Yeah.
She said, "Not for me, darling, not for me. But there are two young men in it who are two of the best talents I have ever seen coming up through the theatre." That's
very,
what she said.
Intriguing.
So I thought, "Oh, I can't be bothered with that." No, I will go and see it. So that was the York Realist, which was at the Donmar.
Yeah, I remember seeing you.
Great production.
Well, and also Leslie Nichol was fantastic as well. I don't think anyone could play the part in the same way.
She was fantastic. But and so this is now, I don't know if it's a pattern, but the last two parts I've seen you in have been, you have said, this is from you, that you find it important to find stories that humanise the homosexual experience.
Yeah.
That is important to you. It matters, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. I think I've been really spoiled in that to be able to talk about like a queer identity and a homosexual experience, and to be able to explore it in a play like York Realist, which looks into a relationship in 1963 between someone from London and someone from York, which actually, even though you would definitely probably categorise it as a gay play, it was more about cultural distances and was deeply relevant to what's happening, I think, in our country now, in that, you know, you could have one person in London who's got a more cerebral understanding of his identity and someone who is in Yorkshire who's never had to question anything, who's far more confident in himself and his skin. And just the meeting of those two people and how they fell in love was a part of it, but then, you know, it was amazing with Leslie Nichol playing the mum and about family and identity within community, and that was all very brilliant. But for me, that really humanised the homosexual experience in that way because it was secondary, and it looked into something that I think otherwise people might take for granted, which is that you can only see yourself as something if you've been exposed to something else.
Yes, and that's what was interesting, because the country boy had no no fear.
No.
And yet it was the guy who'd been in London, and you would think, well, that's the more liberal attitude, he's going to be more comfortable with sexuality, but in fact was the person who wasn't, because he knew there was homophobia out there, whereas the sort of innocence
and been pickled
of the country
by,
guy didn't had never experienced any homophobia.
Well, they've been, because they just, I think they, amazingly, the sister refers to him as... he's not the marrying kind.
Yes.
And that was the idea of, you know, because they were all sort of a Methodist socialist community. And obviously, John, the character I played from London, would have been in the sort of politically front-footed Royal Court set. And of course, Peter Gill, who wrote the play, was one of those people as well. So to have him be there as the writer and amazing Rob Pacey directing, that was just amazing. But then to be able to now... come and do Company, and as I said, in the same reasons that I'm now playing a character that the sexuality isn't referred to by any of the other characters, it's not commented upon at all, and it's, you know, 3 years after marriage is legalized in America, so 3 years before decriminalization in York Realist. There's a trumpet, warm me up.
That's
the fanfare.
Beg your pardon, sorry.
But yeah, so. Yeah, I just there's amazing ways in which you can look through a lens at someone's experience and shine a light on a certain area of it, and I think those two plays have, especially for my understanding of what it is to be gay. So yeah, I'm very proud of those two roles.
Now
and it's just I think it's just a coincidence that they came in the same year. It's not something that I'm searching
for. So my
for.
Producer before I left the building, she said if I couldn't think of any questions to ask, I could just look at you because you are very easy on the eye, and that is true. And I'm not going to say that because obviously that's just like objectifying you and in an awful way. However, you are very fit, and I don't mean like fit, well, you are fit, but you are fit, aren't you? You work out and you do sporty things. Which is what
I do. I see.
That's
I got you.
Way.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got
long
you.
Way of me leading up to your sporting prowess.
Well, it feels like, as I said, that I feel like doing this show is doing a short 5K sprint every night, especially because it's episodic and there's brilliant sequences that all of us have in our pairs. And so, for about 20 minutes, it's really super intense, and then the rest of it. Obviously, is like there's a the side by side, which is a big number opening act two, which Patti LuPone dances in as well as all of us, and it's amazing and everyone's brilliant in the company. But it is, I mean, you must burn about 2,000 calories or something. But so yeah, it does help. And I do when I'm not working, because I don't think I'd be able to do it now. But I started doing sort of triathlons and stuff like that.
Yes. Which is your best bit of the triathlon?
Well, it's definitely not swimming.
It's not?
No,
okay.
I did my first triathlon at Brighton and Hove one. And
Open
water.
No, it's cold.
Dear me. Yeah, and also...
I did one once.
Did you? In a wetsuit?
Never again. No, I didn't do it in a wetsuit.
Oh, gosh, it was a wetsuit.
No, but the swimming was the only bit I was any good at.
Oh, really?
I got out quite quickly from the swim.
Oh, that's
and
good.
Then 250 people overtook me on the bicycle ride.
Oh, yeah, which is like annoying, isn't it? Yeah. Should it so stabilisers that get you going. But you know, when I did
the
it...
Best bike.
I just dived into the water. I just ran to the sea, and I was like, I just remember someone who was really good at triathlons, a friend of mine, said it gets really aggressive, so you just get out there as quickly as you can and you just hold your nerve. And I ran out, I got ahead, and then realised very quickly that I'd done no training and this was going to be horrific. So I turned around onto my back and sculled and just looked everyone in the eye and didn't let them pass.
But then they couldn't grab your feet and things. They do
that. Oh, they do. They grab,
do.
Yeah.
It's not nice. Now, you've done lots. You've done, obviously, television, straight theatre, musicals. What's your favourite, or is it just the thing you're doing at the moment?
I don't know. I think, it's because there's so much change, and which is so exciting about being an actor, and also completely terrifying, that you do kind of fall in love with what you're doing at the moment. You have to love it because it does take a lot of your sort of your lifestyle. I suppose it is a lifestyle job, but I have to say that I just love theatre because it's the community that you get around it, and I know people say that, but it is, you are in control of telling a story every single night, and I've had amazing TV experiences, and I've loved the experience of doing it, and I love the final product, but actually you never know really what your part is and how you're trying to serve an idea of what you think it should be or what the director wants in the moment, which in the edit can completely change. There's something very pure about the storytelling of theatre, and I've always wanted to be in a Western musical, so this is literally a dream come true. This is bucket list, tick, tick, tick.
Perfect. Now,
so
you've
I'm
got four
it.
Sisters, is that right?
Three.
Three
yeah,
sisters.
Three
so you
sisters.
Were brought up with lots of girls.
Yes, yeah.
Do you think that influenced your upbringing, to have such a female environment?
Well, I think so. I think I feel very enriched because of that. definitely. I know that Patty says something really interesting about having a female director, because in Patty LuPone's, who's in this production company's huge career, she's only ever really worked with one female director, and that's Marianne, or I think the last one was in the 70s, which is extraordinary. But she said the feeling is that because there's a woman can bear children, and whether you have had children or not, the idea of that, she says, seems to affect the way that they hold a rehearsal room and how they guide, which I was thinking about, because I was thinking, oh, that's really interesting. But I do think that I personally have benefited from being surrounded by brilliant women all my life. And actually, if I think about it, I've got great male friends as well, but my most key relationships professionally as well have been with women. So there must be something to do with that, and whether that's just nature nurture, and because I've been around women, I love being around women. I think they're the best three. They're my idols, I think, and they always have been and always will be. But so I think I feel very lucky and grateful for them.
So this was Bucket List, West End musical.
Yeah.
And you come in with a bang to a West End musical. It's not like you're in some tiny little part in the background.
It's a wild neon gay theme park.
This is big time. Yeah. More of this to come?
I think, yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, you never know, do you? I mean, whatever comes. Whatever comes your way. I'm definitely more of company until March.
Yes.
I'm not going to break this contract.
No, everyone's staying on to
March,
aren't
they? Yeah, we're all staying,
100%. Because the run's been extended, which is great.
Yes,
news,
it's brilliant.
By
yeah.
golly, everyone's going to want to come see this.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
the reviews,
yeah.
It's been five-star reviews across the board,
isn't
it? Yeah,
it's been
absolutely
so,
fantastic.
Yeah.
So, well, good luck tonight in your
thank
show,
you.
Which you'll be doing in a minute. And thank you so much for
chatting. What a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. And thank you for the cinema roll.
That was the Musicals and Theatre podcast, and if you enjoyed that, then why not subscribe? It's absolutely free to our channel on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear me every weekend morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic.